This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Biomega Fish Oil from Biotics Research. For over 40 years, Biotics Research has been providing the highest quality supplements, surpassing industry standards. Biomega Fish Oil contains therapeutic doses of vital omega-3s in the triglyceride form, which is highly bioavailable. Biotics Research ensures maximum purity and freshness by managing their fish oils from catch to capsule, verified by rigorous independent testing. For more information, go to drhoffman.com/biotics research. That's drhoffman.com/biotics research for Biomega Fish Oil. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla, wherein we answer your questions. With me today, Layla Mutin, who is our nutritionist in residence. Hi, Layla. How are you?
Okay, Dr. Hoffman. How are you doing?
Good, good. Well, it's a peculiar circumstance because here we are broadcasting during a vacation week. You know, we're like
yes.
The U.S. mail, you know, there's no hail, no storm, she'll stay, the whatever it is, you know, that thing. Because
this is a vacation week for a lot of people. The last official weekend of summer.
It's kind of weird because it's as if we've been on a prolonged vacation, you know, sort of an involuntary vacation. So it sort of undermines the meaningfulness of a vacation week. I mean, this is always a slow week, the week before Labor Day, the ultimate week before going back to work. But we're not really going back to work. I mean, we're going back to work in a sense. We are going into the office. This week we'll be in the office tomorrow. Today I'm doing a telemedicine consult with some patients. But yeah, it's been kind of weird. So, you know, the summer of 2020 is in the rearview mirror. Pretty weird. What I'm doing in anticipation of the fall and colder weather is I was scanning the various wetsuit sites for news of a bargain, and because it's going to be colder and my pool is closed. You know, I don't know for how long that will be. And I think there will be limited swimming in New York City. And, you know, I can probably get out to the suburbs. But it's going to be kind of limited because you'll have to reserve a lane. It's going to be more challenging to get in the pool. So I decided I'm going to try and prolong the season by getting a wetsuit, which affords some protection against the cold. And so I think I really snagged a bargain. I got like a $800 wetsuit for $250. It was like 70% off.
I didn't know that was that expensive a wetsuit.
Well, they can go. I mean, that's sort of the top of the line wetsuit. I was going to get a more economical wetsuit. I was looking at one that was like, you know, $400. But then I saw that one of the top rated wetsuits, the Xterra. At one of the sites, there was a temporary setting, and it was like one of those countdown clocks. It said like only 11 hours and 47 minutes, you know, it's to pull the trigger. So I got a wetsuit. I got, you know, one of those head covering things like a cap, you know, and I got gloves and booties. So that's going to hopefully extend the swim scene. I mean, trying to be resourceful in the face of these limitations.
Hey, you're not going to go swimming in the East River or something, are you?
No, I'm not going to pull any stunt like that. No, I'm going to go where the water is clean and pristine out at my weekend house on Long Island.
There you go.
And, I really enjoy swimming there. But the limiting factor is as the fall begins. But, you know, there's a lag phase. You know, the temperature's cool, but the water remains relatively warm. So
where it's even warmer in the water than in out in the air,
So, for example, on a warm day in May, you know, like a 70-degree day in May, the water could be like 54 degrees. And by contrast, you know, in October, when, you know, when the air temperature is 60, the water could still be, you know, like 70 degrees.
Yeah.
So it's you know, the swimming is a real proposition later in the season. So,
yeah.
And apropos of sports, this really crept up on us this year because, like many sports events, the Tour de France was postponed. Mm-hmm. And, you know, here I am, and I'm literally in my study. I'm this Q&A with Layla is not done. We didn't do it face-to-face. Mm-hmm. Layla's in her apartment in Queens, and I'm in my apartment in Manhattan. My office, actually. It's my working office within my apartment. And and I've got the TV screen, and I'm watching the Tour de France. It's on now in real time because wow. it's morning, but it's later there in France, and they're doing, I don't know, something like some phenomenal, like 110, you know, kilometer race through the mountains today.
Wow.
And it's just exciting to see these guys on a bike. And so yeah. There was an article about, you know, what are they doing with coronavirus? And they say that the Tour de France riders are already germaphobes. That they what can really knock you out on a ride is if you have a cold. You know, it's like, okay, you know, you can function, but your you know, power is really going to decline. And you know, as we often discuss immunity, you and I, Layla, and yeah. you know, one of the factors that has to do with immunity is exercise, and a moderate amount of exercise supports immunity.
Yes.
Even you know, pushing a little bit, but to really go for these ultra endurance events, it is immunosuppressive. There's no question.
Yes.
Statistics show that about, I don't know, anywhere from a quarter to a half of Tour de France participants get a respiratory infection. Because they're just redlining, you know, they're like maxing out for 3 weeks. 3 weeks.
Yeah,
it's more than a marathon. It's like a marathon every day for 3 weeks. You know, so their immune systems are really challenged. So they really do pay attention to immunity, and they're used to sequestering. The one thing though is that I don't see it. I'm watching that now on my screen with mute on. Nobody has a mask on. I think one rider has a mask. He's the outlier, but all of them feel impeded with masks, you know, from a breathing standpoint.
Yeah.
And they do ride kind of close. You know, there's this whole idea of drafting and, you know, there's a stream of, I mean, this what's called a peloton, which is a very like a school of fish. And it actually has aerodynamic characteristics. I usually ride solo, but when a peloton passes me, there's a sort of a whoosh sound, you know, it's as if, you know, a big submarine is passing by you or something. Because it creates its own slipstream. And there's the drafting, you know, the guy at the head of the pack actually pulls people behind him. And, it just... For me, who's like kind of a duffer cyclist, it's just exciting and inspiring. And I just love their outfits too. Their outfits are to die for. It's like, you know, the great helmets and the, you know, matching kits and, you know, the bikes painted, you know, in bright colors. Some of them matte black, but, you know, some of them more extravagant. And then they're traversing this beautiful French countryside. So you're really getting... a Tour de France. You know, you're seeing like all these little villages with ancient churches and ruins and, you know, spectacular mountains, and it's terrific.
Does it look like the weather is holding up?
It
so
looks
far?
It looks like it's the most perfect day there. It is like I think it's in the mountains. So it's high up. It's 59 degrees. Mm-hmm. And so all these guys are wearing you know, just shirt sleeves and riding shorts. There's nothing daunting about that. And also I don't think they're overheated, because sometimes you just see the misery on their faces as they're just, you know, it's high humidity and they're just sweating and you know, all of them are, you know, just tossing water bottles to the side of the road, you know, because they don't bother to just, you know, find the nearest trash receptacle. They just throw their bottles, you know, they're throwing the bottles, you know.
So out of all of these riders, you see only one wearing a mask.
I think there's only one.
I hope
may be
he takes
a couple.
It off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're unmasked.
But, yeah.
You know, they are masked in the, see, what happens is, it's just like baseball, is they have teams. And if one, I'm sorry, if two members of a team, and not just the riders, but their support team get sick, they're out of there. They're disqualified. So it really behooves them, you know, after, you know, literally years of training and a lot of money invested too, because these bikes are expensive and their support teams are expensive. They follow, you know, it's kind of crazy because they're riding bikes and there are these cars and motorcycles with them. And those are their support teams and they have like spare bikes. So if your bike conks out, you just say, you know, they see you, they signal. I think they even have radio capabilities and they'll say, you know, I'm in trouble. Get me my spare bike, and then they can just, you know, pull up the support car, and another identical bike comes off. There and these go. Bikes,
it's amazing how light those bikes are.
Yeah, and I know from, you know, from shopping bikes. Mm-hmm. I just repaired my bike, and just to repair it was like several hundred dollars.
Wow.
And when I got it, you know, it's pretty expensive, but the bikes now, the really high-end bikes, the retail high-end bikes, are like $10,000, $12,000, $14,000.
Wow.
And, but these bikes are like the very, very, very best bikes. Yeah. And so, you know, we're talking maybe each bike could be $20,000. Yeah. And they're just amazing. You know, and what's nice about bikes is bikes are sort of a, and you know, we're going on and on about, you know, this, but I get excited about it. Bikes are sort of an homage to the mechanical era. You know, we have everything is motorized and, you know, even in New York, you know, one of the things that worries me about New York is they have like a lot of electric bikes and they come at you real fast with a lot of impact. And then, you know, they'll come from the wrong direction too. So it makes life even more as if it wasn't unpleasant enough.
Well,
you know,
a bike that was going in the wrong direction.
Hit you.
Was several years ago when we were back in Chelsea. He took me down.
Yeah. You're lucky you didn't have like, you know, brain injury, you know.
I didn't have a head injury.
Yeah. I mean, you could have been like,
I got a scrape on my knee and my elbow and I was shook up, but you know, that was about it.
It could have been like,
thank God.
Leo, let's talk about vitamin D. Yeah. I don't remember much about that, you know.
Who are you?
Yeah, right. I used to work with you, Dr. Hoffman. You remember me? Okay. Anyway, so this to me, you know, a lot of people look at this. They look at a bunch of guys on bikes. What's the sport? There's no competition. I mean, it's not like like soccer, baseball, football. You know, there's no, but there's strategy. There's endurance, there's heroism, and these are among the most superbly conditioned humans on Earth. Mm-hmm. And believe me, I mean, just the way, I'm just watching right now, they're going up this hill at a rapid pace, and they're hammering on the pedals. And, you know, I'm just an okay bicyclist, and I'm also 67 years old. And I don't even know if I could even get up that hill. You know, in the lowest gear at the slowest speed.
I'd have to get off and walk my bike up
that hill. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But these guys are all like hammering up that hill, you know, and it's just one among dozens of hills that they'll have to climb. Interesting thing about this event, too, and I'm sorry to wax long, is they have an Israeli team.
Uh-huh.
And the funny thing about it's his first year. Uh-huh. It's called Israel Startup. But they're going to be a force within Tour de France. They have one Israeli rider and they have about, 8 mercenary riders, like an Irish rider. And, you know, they're going to have Chris Froome next year, who's the, former winner of the Tour de France. Mm-hmm. And, it's kind of cool. You know, it's like Israeli national pride and they're doing this because they want to make every kid in Israel an aspiring Tour de France bike rider. And I think that's great, you know, for a statement for physical fitness. And in a small country like that, it could go really viral. You know, it could really take off and you could get, you know, a million kids on bikes, you know, emulating
their role modeling. Yeah.
You know, And they have, you know, you see the bikes. It's like Israel. That's cool. You know, a little tiny country is part of that. So it's kind of cool.
That's great.
So far, I haven't spotted any North Korean, teams yet. No. But anyway. All right, let's get to questions. Boy, we
spent a lot of time talking about
Tour de France.
We've got an email from Cecily. I've been taking SPM for joint pain for several months. Mm-hmm. Love SPM. Mm-hmm. Extraordinary anti-inflammatory SPM is.
Yeah.
And Cecily's asking, do I still need to take fish oil? I take a lot of supplements and I don't want to duplicate. Thank you for the best health podcast in the country.
Ooh, the ultimate accolade.
Wow.
Okay.
Thank you. Wow.
That's that. I learned a new acronym. GOAT. You know what that stands for? GOAT.
What?
GOAT.
What does it stand for?
G-O-A-T. Greatest of all time. We get the nutritional podcast GOAT Award.
The
kids know what that is. Ask any, like, you know, millennial or, you know, teenager.
They talk via acronyms.
Yeah. They know what GOAT is. Okay. So, anyway. SPM. That's another. Okay.
So
more
alphabet soup. SPM is great. Yeah. She's wondering if she still needs to take fish oil.
Well, let's define it anyway. You know, what is SPM? Specific pro-resolving mediators. Okay.
Yes.
And there's an emerging science about these things. These are actually metabolites of the omega-3 fatty acids, EPA and DHA.
Yeah.
And the name actually has the connotation that they are resolving. There is a name for these substances. They're called resolvins. Isn't that a great name?
How apropos, yeah.
Yeah. And they help to quell inflammation. Now, some of the benefits of EPA and DHA come directly from EPA and DHA, but some come from their downstream metabolites like SPM. I would urge you, if you're wonky enough to want to pursue this, is Google specific pro-resolving mediators. And there's several nice scientific articles on this subject and what they do, the role they play. But, you know, since inflammation is such a key part of what makes us sick, you know, not just rheumatoid arthritis and joint problems, but many problems, including the meltdown that people experience when they have very severe COVID-19. They develop cytokine storm. And resolvins maybe, and EPA and DHA indeed, may be part of what helps to put the brakes on an over-exuberant immune response.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not suppress the immune system, but anyway.
You want the immune system to be like Goldilocks, just right. You don't want it overreactive and you don't want it underreactive. Yeah.
That's right. That's right. The Goldilocks principle. Mm-hmm. So,
Should she take fish oil while taking SPM, would you say?
The answer is yes.
I don't see the harm.
Not only the harm, but I think it's essential. Frankly, it's more economical because the fish oil is going to be less expensive than the SPM. So this fish oil will indeed push your body's endogenous production of SPMs, but then you can sort of top it off by taking SPM. I take SPM, not because I suffer from a severe inflammatory problem, but I think, you know, at 67, you want to keep inflammation in check. So I take it. A couple of companies make it. It's made by Metagenics is one of the brands, and you can get it via FullScript.
Yep.
So, you know, wonderful. By the way, so much of that brain pathology has to do with inflammation.
Yes.
And those little tiny white spots that we see appearing in our brains as we get older, and they say, oh, don't worry about that. That's like, yeah, everybody has that. That's natural. Those are the result of some degree of inflammation that is unchecked. You know, the body sort of scars off parts of your brain, but those parts of your brain are lost, you know.
So they're not mold spores, huh?
No, hopefully not. in some instances. And by the way, you know, you laugh. And I think you're saying it, you know, provocatively. But there is some evidence that fungal overgrowth in the gastrointestinal tract, at the very least, and maybe in the brain, has something to do with Alzheimer's.
Inhaled Alzheimer's.
I'm sorry?
Yeah. And inhaled Alzheimer's, as Dale Bredesen has talked about. I'm reading the book that you handed me. You did a podcast with her already.
Yeah.
Dr. Jill Krista about mold.
Right, right.
She talks about.
But check this one out.
Yeah.
This, you know, fungi in gut linked to higher Alzheimer's risk can be reduced through ketogenic diet. I'll send you this study. Mm-hmm. But it's... I'm pulling it up right now on my iPad. Fungi in gut linked to higher Alzheimer's risk can be reduced through ketogenic diet. There are specific fungi in the gut associated with a higher risk of Alzheimer's disease and found in people with mild cognitive impairment. But they can be altered in a beneficial manner by eating a modified Mediterranean diet. Or in other words, a low-carb Mediterranean diet. Very, very interesting. They call it the mycobiome. Not the
microbiome.
M-Y-C-O.
Yeah.
And these mycotoxins, toxins made by the fungi in your gut, actually may damage your brain. And, you know, in the book that I shared with you, you know, we learned a lot about mycotoxins. That's the book by Jill Krista. And Jill does a really beautiful job describing the harmful effects of... mycotoxin. I feel sorry for the people in Louisiana because they got all flooded out, you know, and then, the sun came out and it's all good, right? The waters recede, but there's going to be a long legacy of mold-related disease.
Yeah.
Because once areas are flooded and wet, especially in hot environments like that, there's a lot of mold. And there's tens and tens of millions of Americans who are affected by mold.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It really is something, and it's more prevalent than believed, and I'm finding out so much from this book as well. And the list of symptoms is ongoing. It's really something.
And part of the reason that I share that book with you, because I like to not inundate you with stuff, you know, like, here's another book you'd like. I'm trying to get it out of my, you know, apartment, just dump it on Layla. There's a really good diet section in there.
Oh, yeah.
And
great.
It demonstrates that diet plays a big role. And there's certain foods that you don't want to eat when you are subject to mold toxicity, which are
anything fermented, dried, cured, aged, you know, that kombucha tea that you're drinking.
Didn't we have a guy? The guy, he was like covered with incrustations. And he said, you know, I'm making my own, you know, it's like kombucha. Bathtub gin. I'm making my own kombucha. And you tell people what kombucha is.
Oh, it's like it's like a probiotic beverage. Mm-hmm. It has a tiny bit, it's got a little bit of alcohol in it because that's a byproduct of it. But again, it's fermented. It's like if you're already yeasty, moldy, candida laden, all that other fermented stuff is basically joining the party.
Mm-hmm.
It's not necessarily helping to push back on that mold or the yeast overgrowth or anything. It's just basically adding to the problem.
And kombucha has a mother. It has like a kind of a filmy ghost within it. And that is the...
kind of like apple cider vinegar.
Like unpasteurized apple cider vinegar. There's like a kind of a filmy...
looks like a little webby thing. It's the mother.
The mother. Yeah. They call it the mother, which is, I mean, you can take it, pluck it out, and you can start your next kombucha fermentation.
Right. It's kind of like, if you want to call it a starter, really.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You
know? A starter, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, anyway. So, yeah.
Interesting.
Good. All right. We have more questions. Give us a foretaste of what we're going to be talking about in part two, please.
Oh, my goodness. It's up to part two?
Yeah.
Oh, my husband and I are taking berberine, but my doctor said I shouldn't take it long term.
Mm-hmm.
What say you, Dr. Hoffman?
Okay, and the reason, we'll get into it. We'll get into it. That's a whole other discussion. Part two coming up. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, today with Layla Mutin, who is our nutritionist in residence. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla. Well, it wouldn't be Q&A with Layla with me doing it solo, so here we are together. And we'll be back in just a moment. Radioprogram@AOL.com is the destination for questions. See you in a few.